What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff, and I'm the Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. Today's show, we're going to dig in on Mizzou's NFL prospects with draft analyst Joe DeLeon. How early will Armon Membu be picked? Is Luther Burden still a first-round talent? Will Brady Cook hear his name called in Titletown? All that to come, plus a little bit of panic meter reading on the Mizzou men's basketball front. But first, a programming announcement. This episode is, unfortunately, the last free episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast coming your way for the foreseeable future. Beginning next week, the Eye on the Tigers podcast will be largely leaving your Apple and Spotify feeds to live behind the STLtoday.com paywall, along with the rest of our Mizzou content. To be frank, it doesn't take a genius to know what that means. This will be the last episode that many of you listen to. If you're interested and able to support our work, a subscription to STLtoday.com will get you continued episodes of the podcast, plus our thorough swath of stories and reader chats to keep you informed of everything going on around Mizzou. That's my writing, our columnist writing, plus all our Cardinals, Blues, City SC, and SLU coverage, and of course, our news side work as well. I am biased, but I do think it is extremely worth your money there. You can visit stltoday.com/story to find subscription offers. I'm sorry to report this change to the podcast. The Post-Dispatch is owned by a company called Lee Enterprises that made this call. I was, unfortunately, and probably unsurprisingly, for those of you who work in the corporate world, not consulted in the decision. So thank you to everyone who has listened to this show since I took over and stuck with us through that transition. An even bigger thank you to those of you who subscribe to make our work possible. Hopefully, we'll talk again soon. On that happy note, let's have a fun, final, free show. We're welcoming in to the show Joe DeLeon. He's an NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. That's J-O-E-D-E-L-E-O-N-E. I think I spelled that right. You heard him on the podcast about a year ago. He's back now despite being very busy and probably a little tired this time of year. Joe, I know you're sort of freshly back from the combine and recovering from that. How are you doing? I imagine this is a fun time of year for you, though, as all this is coming together.
It is. It is my favorite time of year compared to I love the college football season. The college football season is a different type of chaos because there's really like no days off and you're constantly engaged with headlines and with games. But when we get to the draft, it's all about putting a lot on your plate and reacting to what's already happened and trying to project. I love watching film. I love getting to sit back and like really evaluate these players. And I also love doing guest spots like this. But my schedule is completely, you know, it's crazy, but you love the craziness part of it. This is why you get into sports media to get to be able to talk ball and talk about what these guys are going to do in the league.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're going to try to do a little bit today. We'll talk a little Luther Burden, Armon Membu, Brady Cook, some of the big Mizzou names who all had good combine performances in Indianapolis by all accounts. And so actually, Joe, let's start there before we dig into these guys too much. You know, how much weight do you give when somebody has a really good showing in Indy, when they have, you know, a good 40 and the measurements come in nicely? Is that something that you'll see as cause to significantly move them up your draft boards? It seems like there's been buzz, but it also is just some physical tests that may or may not have all that much to do with football, right? I'm curious where you kind of fall on that.
Yeah, but first and foremost, as a lot of people say, that the interviews are the most important part of this process, and we're not privy to that. We don't get to really hear, you hear the scuttlebutt, you hear the rumors that come out of the player and team interviews, but we don't get to actually witness that. We only get to witness the on-field drills. For me, and I think for most good draft analysts, for all good draft analysts, when you watch the testing and you see the on-field drills, it's more so important for you to denote and to point out, like, okay, you know, this guy ran faster than I was expecting. This guy jumped better than I was expecting. This guy looked more fluid in the drills than I was expecting. That allows for us to go back and go, okay, something, I missed something. Or maybe there's a prospect way further down the board that you didn't even, because there's so many participants that you didn't even consider watching, that you're now like, oh man, this guy's got juice. Like, we need to keep track of him, and I need to go and get a report on him so that I can talk about him and see if the numbers match the tape. You're not going to make big swinging adjustments to your projections. It also works in the opposite side. Like, Tez Johnson was a really galvanizing player to bring up because he's under 160 pounds. He runs a 4.55. To run that slow is a red flag, and it allows for us as draft analysts to go, okay, I got to go back and watch the tape because clearly I missed something, because I thought this guy was going to be much faster than this. And can he even succeed at this speed? So it's really to just find those outliers and help us figure out what direction do we need to go in making small adjustments instead of big ones.
That makes a lot of sense. So someone, we'll talk Luther Burden here, because he's interesting to me because he's someone whose stock I feel like has swung a lot over the last couple of years. And it's telling, one, that we've been talking about Luther Burden in the NFL, at least here on the Mizzou side of things, for a couple of years since he came in. It seemed like after the 2023 season, when you were seeing some of those, you know, way too early mocks that are a year in advance, he was someone who, you know, could very well be a top five talent in this draft. And that tracked with just the college football view of him as, you know, going into this past season, oh, maybe he's a Heisman guy, maybe he's a Biletnikoff guy, you know, getting preseason All-American nods and stuff like that. And then this season, folks who are listening know this by now, they've watched it, but it never materialized for him this year. And it seemed like his stock slipped from top 10 guy to, you know, kind of middle of the first round. To now, I've seen some people saying he's not a first round talent at all. Now it seems like his good combine performance ran a 4.42, I think it was, in the 40 there. You know, it helped maybe stop the skid. I guess at this point in time, where do you see Luther Burden, and what do you kind of make of what his stock has become?
Yeah, well, one, the testing was phenomenal, because I think that there was this expectation that he was somebody who was quicker than fast, that maybe he runs a 4.5. But the 4.42, I think, justifies a lot of people that have him as the first or the second wide receiver in this class. He's my number two wide receiver. My co-host Ryan Roberts has him as his wide receiver one because of the value that he can provide in offense. I think his draft stock is something that we need to look past the statistics. It really stinks that when we have receivers that are in these difficult conferences, that there's elite talent, that when everything around them isn't working, it's going to negatively impact the numbers that they put up on a game-by-game basis. So Brady Cook was banged up and in and out of the lineup this year. The offensive line outside of Armon Membau was really a mess, and they gave up a ton of pressures on a game-by-game basis. It was one of the biggest talking points that I had in predicting games with Mizzou, and it was, hey, they're not going to be able to block against this defensive line. Texas A&M was a perfect example of this, how poorly they played. So when you weren't able to move collectively as a unit downfield, it was going to limit the opportunities for Luther Burden to get the football as effectively as he could. And I kind of also felt like maybe there was just a general misuse from like ways that he was being deployed the year prior as a sophomore, and then this year as a junior. It didn't feel like there was that same intent of, hey, Luther Burden is great with the ball in his hands. Let's get him the ball on a screen. Let's get him the ball in a drag route. Let's just get him these short route concepts that allow for him to use his quick feet to get the ball and then to make people miss. He is going to be in the NFL that Deebo Samuel type of a receiver. We know that this is a very popular comparison to make. I think that it's kind of soured a little bit because Deebo has slowed down. My co-host, again, Ryan, always has really good comparisons, and he thinks this could be Golden Tate. You know, a guy that's just got really quick feet, that's got a thick build, that's kind of built like a running back, and is going to win across the middle of the field because he's making linebackers miss because he's just so shifty. But if we try to ask Luther Burden to beat you over the top, I think that's a bit of a misuse, and I think teams need to be smart about using him in the correct manner.
And that's one of the things. I'm glad you brought up the Deebo comp, even the Golden Tate one, because those are ones I've seen out there, and I think that's interesting because, you know, one of the things that never clicked for Mizzou this past season was the deep ball, and that involved trying to get it to Luther over the top sometimes, and that you know, against some college guys, he can get that, but you don't expect that to translate to the NFL. Yeah. What I'm curious about is how you see his ability to create once the ball is in his hands translating. He's someone who, there are so many plays I can think of, just a few from this past season, where like you said, it's just a matter of get him the ball in some space and he's going to make something happen. It could even, there were some times where it was handoffs. And that was one of the things that I'd push for last season of, you know, just once or twice a game, line him up in the backfield and hand the ball off to him and see what happens. Obviously a big uptick in defensive quality in the NFL. Is that something you think can translate ready made? Is he that good of a prospect that once the ball's in his hands, it's not going to be an issue at the next level?
I think so, because, and this is why I'm not one of the people that's pounding the table to say like, oh, this guy's going to drop out of the first round. And it, even if he does, I think Burden's going to go on to be the most productive of any of the receivers that are selected this year if he plays to his potential. There's a reason why we give the Debo comp and why that keeps getting put out there by a ton of people, because he's built to play as a running back if they wanted him to, because there's not many receivers that at his build are 5'11", over 200 pounds, that have that style frame that he plays with. So to be able to get creative of bringing him in the backfield, I think to bring him in motion on jet sweeps, all of those things are how teams need to use him. That's how you're going to create big splash plays with him. He's somebody who his route running, it's inconsistent. He rounds his routes a lot. I think that he's a prospect that at times kind of thought, oh, I'm just a better athlete than this guy who's covering me. I'm just going to run past him. You have to be a lot more efficient and refined as a route runner in order to create separation as a route runner, to succeed in the NFL. So early on, yeah, I think that the biggest way that you deploy him is just getting him the rock in all of these different ways. The one team that I think would be the most amazing to see him with, or actually the two, is if he ended up with the 49ers now that they're getting rid of Debo, or if he ended up with the Miami Dolphins, who produced Debo's, Mike McDaniel produced Debo's best season for 1,400 yards back when he was the OC of the 49ers. So either of those teams, I think, would be able to use him super, super creatively.
Well, and so on the fit front, I'm kind of curious, and maybe this is just a question that only Luther knows the answer, or time will tell, but I'm curious what kind of team would be the best fit for him, because now it seems like he's gone from a point where he'd be taken so early in the draft that he's going to be, you know, frankly, the team's most exciting offensive player and have a lot of pressure from day one, to a spot where now if he's in, you know, the middle or back end of the first round, he's probably going to a team that already has an established wide receiver where he goes in and doesn't have that pressure. Is that a good thing for a guy who might need to sharpen the route running a little bit? You know, he doesn't need to get a ton of target volume. He's got a stronger build than people give him credit for. He can hold on in contact, but you know, I don't think you probably want your shiny new rookie wide receiver to have to do too much of that.
Yeah, even coming into the season, this college football season, like I wasn't all the way there on him being a top 10 pick for the reason of like what we're talking about now with him as a prospect. If he was getting drafted to be a team's number one option, he was going to be set up for failure, because that's not who he is. It's just like how Debo Samuel this year, when Brandon Ayuk went down with the injury, Debo had to be the number one option, and he was wildly unsuccessful because he just wasn't getting open enough, because there was easy attention that was being directed towards him by opposing defenses. So Luther Burden needs to go to a team that already has an established number one guy, in my opinion. Like, you need to send him somewhere where the main receiver is getting attention, and that allows for him to get one-on-one opportunities in the slot to then be able to move him around and to get the creative with his deployment. I think that if he was expected to be on every single snap, like the number one read that you're turning to for every single play, that's not going to produce the results that you're hoping for with Burden. He needs to be just a really, really good wide receiver too in an offense.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's where, you know, Mizzou just didn't give him that much volume this year, which I think frustrated folks at times that there'd be stretches into the second quarter where it's here's Luther Burden's first touch of the game. But it doesn't seem like he'll be able to kind of withstand that volume at the next level. Let's talk Armon Membu, because I think he's been, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the biggest winners, regardless of position, of just this kind of pre-draft cycle. He's someone who came into Mizzou, is leaving after 3 years. started at right tackle the past 3 years. Let's start here, actually, because this seems like sort of an almost existential question with Membu. Tackle or guard, where do you see him fitting in there? I know the measurements have been a key part of how NFL teams see him with that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be based on the team that takes him and what their bigger need is on, do they need to address tackle or do they need to address guard? Like last year, Troy Fotanu, similar kind of like really good athlete, really good mover in space. Everyone thought that was a guard because he's a little bit more compact, but he had the arm length. But the Steelers put him at tackle because they needed a tackle more than they needed a guard. I personally would rather have him at guard. I know that Missouri was able to use him and move him in space, but I love the thought of him pulling. Like, I really love the thought of him getting in space. I love the thought of him in a zone heavy scheme, of him working to the second level and having those opportunities to work to the second level to track down linebackers and defensive backs. And he shows, one of the things I love about his film, I shared a clip of him a while ago that got really good run. And I think that there was when you and I had texted about it, when I posted that clip, that he loves to kill linebackers and safeties when he sees them at the second level. Like he's going to take dudes out. I love that mentality that he has. And it almost doesn't show up as much when he's blocking from the line of scrimmage. So I want to get him in space. I want to get him on the move. He's a tremendous prospect though, as you said, where his testing was great. And I think anyone who had watched his tape knew that he was a great athlete. It just really affirmed this belief of, this is a big dude who can move. And I think a lot of teams that value that in their linemen are going to prioritize him.
It's been fun to see in the testing. He was someone who even a couple of years ago was making Bruce Feldman's freaks list as just one of the best athletes in college football. And then you see that, you know, you see that on the tape and in games. But then it's when he's running, I think, the loudest 40-yard dash at the combine is probably a safe superlative to give it. That you know, you see it pop in there. He just strikes me as someone who would be so fun in one of these. You know, you mentioned it kind of zone heavy, but just run dominant, aggressive offenses in the NFL where he can get ahead of steam and use that ability to move. He doesn't need to be stationary. You know, he can hold up and pass pro, but it just seems so fun to get him going downhill.
Yeah, allowing for him to pick up a head of steam is like where his success comes into play. Getting him worked up and being able to just generate force through the speed that he's picking up because he's so fast in a straight line or down the field. That is where it's exciting to watch this kid because he has that talent and then just that rare ability to fly. I think that for him right now in this draft class, he's really solidified himself as a first round pick. This tackle guard class, it's a mess. Like we start to look on day two, it really starts to thin out. There are not going to be any late options for future starters. It's going to be a lot of backup guys that go on day three and at the end of day two. So I think teams are prioritizing getting these rare prospects that have the physical tools that they can maybe mold a little bit into becoming a high level starter. The testing performance, I think, really solidified that a team that needs interior offensive line help are going to take Membu in the first.
And how much does his age factor into just what kind of elevates him to the top? Obviously, coming out of college after 3 years there, still even young for his age. I imagine that's something that is attractive, too, that you're getting a guy without a ton of mileage and still room to grow.
Yeah, I think that the age discussion in general has gotten really interesting because like certain prospects need to stay in college longer. The rawness does kind of make you wish that he stayed a little bit longer and refined his technique. But regardless, a lot of these college offensive linemen, not none, but a lot of these college offensive linemen do not feel like they're prepared for the NFL. Their technique is a mess. They're playing in offenses where they're not translating a lot of their technique to NFL offenses. So yes, I think that is an attractiveness. There's a lot of young prospects in this class among the offensive linemen. So it's not going to like really push them up like a ton further. But I think when an NFL team is making that decision and they have him rated highly, it's, hey, look what he was able to do as a 3-year guy and what we can get out of him, knowing that he is moldable and that he's not near his ceiling.
This is maybe more a question of team fit or interest than his actual talent, but how early in the first do you think Membu could wind up going here?
I think at the very least, he's going to be a top 20 guy. I think that if you look in the top 20 picks, there's a lot of teams that need offensive linemen. Like the Cardinals are like the first team that I think of. I think that the Cincinnati Bengals could address offense, interior offensive line, because they just got rid of Alex Kappa. There are so many teams that I think need some sort of boost and need a boost of athleticism and youth in their O-lines that he should go in the top 20 even as soon as that. I would really be surprised if he was a prospect who fell out of the first round because, again, there is a desperation to find offensive linemen this year.
That makes sense. And then I guess the kind of interesting and fun question for, I think, Mizzou fans to discuss, and this is what we'd texted about when you posted that Membu clip. As of right now, today is what, March 6th? We're recording this, still a ways to go before the draft. But as of today, if you had to guess, who goes first, Luther Burden or Armon Membu?
I'd have to go with Armon Membu because of the momentum that he has right now for teams needing offensive linemen. And I think that even though I really like Luther Burden, and I think Luther Burden's going to go on to be the most successful receiver in this class, I'm not going to ignore the signals from other analysts that have good sourcing and just also hearing from other rumors from other people I've talked to that it does seem like there is a decent shot that he falls out of the first round. If we just look at this class and where the talent is, defense is going to be heavy in the first round. It's going to be a lot of D tackles, a lot of edge rushers, some corners that mixed in there. There should be potentially two safeties with Malachi Starks and Nick Emmanuari, and then the two quarterbacks that are going to go where they go. That could slide the receivers in general that the NFL has question marks about all of these guys. Matthew Golden, Tetero McMillan, Emeka Abuka, and Luther Burden. Because there's no de facto, like, we love this prospect, I wouldn't be surprised that if we don't see Burden and one of those other players fall out of the first round.
Yeah, that's going to be something to watch on draft day. Mizzou fans looking to see back-to-back or two first rounders for the first time in quite a while, even though there won't be as many players drafted as last year. Someone who's not in first round discussion and it's just kind of on the fringe of whether he'll hear his name called is Brady Cook, who, you know, again, I don't want to belabor what the last few years have been for him at Mizzou, but a whole lot of ups and downs. He has rushing ability. He has a physicality. He tested extremely well in Indy, which makes sense. There were almost folk stories of what he was able to do in the weight room and some of the testing just internally here in Columbia. So it was cool to see that on display. But there are issues with his arm. He has an injury history. He was injury prone the last few years. You know, the narrative out there that certainly seems to be accurate is that this is a weaker quarterback class on the whole, which is maybe why Brady Cook is in discussions as a potential draft pick anyway. What's your kind of sense, Joe, of what the market for a Brady Cook type quarterback might be this year?
Yeah, well, one, I've had a bit of a complicated relationship with talking about Brady Cook because I've been kind of negative on him, and Mizzou fans have not liked that on my college show that I do, the Ruffino and Joe show. So this is automatically going to come off as me hating him. I don't think he's going to get drafted. I think that the testing numbers were great. I think that this quarterback class is so bad that I think a lot of teams are – the teams that need a quarterback badly are going to go after Shador Sanders and Cam Ward. The teams that are looking for backups with starter upside are going to take Jalen Milroe, Will Howard, and Jackson Dart. And then there could be a couple other guys sprinkled in there. I don't think that many quarterbacks are going to get selected because Brady Cook kind of falls into that bucket of these prospects that – have some athletic tools, but not a very big arm, not a lot of consistent production on film, not a lot of consistent tape, a lot of mistakes, a lot of turnovers here and there. There's just too many players, it feels like, that are similar to him. You know, that there's not really a way to separate himself in that third tier of guys that are going to be competing for a third quarterback spot on a roster. So to put it very bluntly, I think it's unlikely he gets drafted. If he does, it's going to be at the very end of day three.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. And he's someone too who I've long thought, you know, if he can get in the room for interviews and meetings with some of these teams, maybe they convince him. But it just seems like there, you know, there are question marks that have been certainly in the stat sheets and the game logs, but also on tape. And some of that, I think, improved this year, you know, especially the turnovers and kind of late game decision making. But I also just, you know, he is someone who has played through injuries that has an impact in the long haul. And but like you said, it wouldn't be drafting, you know, nobody's going to draft Brady Cook and say, well, this guy's going to be our starter this year or even 2 years down the road.
Right. And that's the biggest part with this. And I think that the NFL has shown us when they pick quarterbacks, it's usually with that thought of, hey, could this guy start for us at some point? When you're not doing that if you're a team with a young quarterback, but like if you're a team with an established starter, you're picking a quarterback late because you have that hope of like, maybe we could turn this into something. Either way, he's going to be a really good backup for us. His upside is being a good backup or a good third quarterback slash practice squad guy. I mean, I'll go as far as say, I think Brady Cook would be a hell of a player in the UFL. And I don't say that with any disrespect at all, but the guys that are as athletic as he is tend to succeed in the UFL. So maybe that's where he finds a shot to get to the league if he plays an alternative league for a little bit.
Well, that would I think that'd be fun for our local folks. See him quarterback his hometown, St. Louis Battlehawks, play in the Dome. I don't think people would be too mad to see that. Well, Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and share a little bit. I know you're a super busy guy, but we appreciate your insight and keep doing all the cool draft work, and we'll be sure to follow it between now and the draft. Again, you can find Joe on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. He's a college football analyst for A to Z Sports. New gig over there. It's been cool to see all of that coming together.
Thanks so much, Eli. It was great getting to catch up, and I'm sure that we'll get to talk a little bit more soon.
For sure. Thanks, Joe. Welcome back to I Am the Tigers. Big thank you to Joe for stopping by the program there. We're going to close out today's episode with a quick look at the panic meter for Mizzou men's basketball. The Tigers lost on Wednesday in Norman, Oklahoma, 96-84 to the Sooners. A few things here. One, I guess it is a trend at this point that is interesting. Mizzou did not complete a season sweep this year. Tigers got three teams two times, those teams being the closest ones geographically, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma. Mizzou won all three of those games at home, lost all three on the road. Those losses happen to have been the last three road games, so it's a three-game losing streak away from Mizzou Arena. Tigers will finish the season 3-7 in true road games. They are 3-8 outside of friendly confines, but of course, only neutral site basketball to come after this weekend's home finale. That's Kentucky coming to town there. A battle for NCAA tournament seeding, SEC tournament seeding. Mizzou is out of the double bye race. Now they needed to win out this week to have a chance. Lost control of their destiny by losing to Vanderbilt in overtime over the weekend. Needed two wins this week. Lost Oklahoma, and that settles that. So somewhere between fifth and eighth in the SEC tournament seeding, that'll be where Missouri comes in. The concerning thing at this moment in time, there are a few, and there are, you know, several things that went into why Mizzou lost this game on Wednesday. But what I think is the concerning thing, because it is becoming a trend, is defense, and more specifically, interior defense, paint protection, rim protection, all of that. Oklahoma scored a whole lot of points in the paint against Mizzou. They scored 48 points in the paint. And what was frankly remarkable was that Oklahoma's first 20 points of the game all came in the paint. It was 18 points from the field, and then two more from free throws that were drawn on a foul in the paint. And it was clear from the get-go here that this is how Oklahoma wanted to score. They wanted to get downhill, wanted to attack the rim, and Mizzou didn't have an answer. Again, 48 points in the paint. What I was looking through the stats here and the quote-unquote analytics of this, even though it's not really all that complicated, because it feels like this has gotten markedly worse for Mizzou lately. Arkansas just went downhill relentlessly. Mizzou would switch, and Arkansas would attack that and feed its bigs post-ups in that game against Vanderbilt, which is an undersized team, a very undersized team, especially compared to Mizzou. Paint points were a factor there as well. And so if you look at the season as a whole, Mizzou has played 30 games this year. In seven of those, the opponent has scored 40 or more points in the paint. So 7 out of 30 games, 40 plus paint points conceded. 5 of those times have been in the last 7 games. 5 of the last 7 games, Mizzou has given up 40 plus points in the paint. And those are 5 of the only 7 times that's happened this season. That was at Georgia. That was at Arkansas. Home against South Carolina. Mizzou won that game by 30. But still gave up more than 40 points in the paint. South Carolina's not a very good team, but Colin Murray-Broyles went to work down there. And then over the weekend at Vanderbilt and Wednesday night down in Norman. That's a crack in the armor. Dennis Gates didn't really seem to want to admit it after the game. He's talking about fouls and whistles and that stuff, the things he kind of tends to talk about when the defense isn't working. He doesn't have a ton of answers. Caleb Grill talking, you know, that it was a matter of aggression. It is worth noting that some of these teams, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma, and actually Georgia too, have been, you know, they're bubble teams who are fighting for spots in the NCAA tournament, who need wins. Wednesday against Oklahoma was an important game for both teams. It was a must win for Oklahoma if they're going to make the tournament. It was a must win for Mizzou if Mizzou is going to get a double bye. Oklahoma won, Missouri didn't. So one team is on still on track there. The other is not. It has been a theme for Mizzou. I it doesn't seem to me to be strictly the bigs aren't getting it done. Mizzou doesn't really have a shot blocker this year. It's just, you know, Mark Mitchell, I think, had one in this game, but that's not really part of his game. Josh Gray, not really part of his game. A big factor here is what's happening on the perimeter. Mizzou likes to switch everything and likes to poke at the ball for steals, but what it seems like that's leading to a lot of times, or certainly a significant number of times, is guards poking at the ball, being caught flat-footed and getting blown by. I think fan base consensus now is that there is significant worry about what this team is going to be heading into March, heading into postseason play. Next week at the SEC tournament, we'll know after Saturday who Mizzou gets there. I guess it won't be really until the day before that Mizzou knows actually who it's playing, but it'll be the winner of one of those first games. It's not going to work to go like this. This is, you know, the playbook is out on how to attack Mizzou. You saw Oklahoma using that early on. I imagine other teams will look at this trend and say, well, if you look at recent history, there's 40 points waiting for you at the rim if you can get downhill to take them. And I imagine most teams will try to take that. The question becomes, how can Mizzou adjust at this time of year? Is this something that's a fatigue issue, just regression to the mean, coming back to earth? A flaw that has been exploited with the switching, that I think will be revealed certainly next week. But it's getting to the time of year where something being revealed probably means a loss, and without this turning around, perhaps not a ton of postseason basketball in Mizzou's future. That said, there hasn't been a crazy impact to the seeding conversation for Mizzou. Still, probably, you know, a 5 seed seems within reach. You know, maybe now it's more. Is it are the Tigers a 5 or a 6? Then are they a 4 or a 5 or even a 3? But some of that depends on what happens against Kentucky. Kentucky's a team that has a very similar resume to Missouri. You know, a little bit stronger. They're kind of a, I don't even want to say a full blown tier because there's a lot of muddling with teams in this mix. But you know, there may be a seed ahead of Mizzou in the tournament conversation. But Mizzou gets them at home, so it's certainly a winnable game there, and we'll see how Missouri closes it out. All that coverage, of course, and moving forward, episodes of this podcast available at stltoday.com. We're going to call that a show for today. We'll be back next week at our new home, stltoday.com/podcast, talking Mizzou hoops at the SEC tournament. We'll preview things there so that you know what you need to know going into Nashville. And of course, I'll have you covered from whatever happens out there and whatever happens in March Madness and the rest of the way. Thank you sincerely to all of you who have taken the time to listen to this podcast. A big thank you to those of you who support our work by subscribing to SDL Today, and will find us there. Thanks, folks. Have a great rest of your day. A quick programming note to our loyal listeners. Here at the Post-Dispatch, subscribers power most of our work, allowing us to cover Mizzou as thoroughly as we do, including producing this podcast. Starting next week, the Eye on the Tigers podcast will be available exclusively for our MVPs, our Post-Dispatch subscribers. If you're already a subscriber, thank you. You're all set. If you aren't, now's the time. You can go to stltoday.com/story to see the latest subscription offers so that you can stay connected to this podcast and read the rest of our Mizzou coverage. Going forward, there will be a new home for the Eye on the Tigers podcast, stltoday.com/podcasts. Again, that's stltoday.com/podcasts. Thank you to everyone for listening and subscribing to support our work.